2 weeks ago, we remembered Jesus' baptism along with our own as we thought about what that meant to Jesus and what that meant to us. We pick Mark's gospel up this week just following Jesus' baptism. Jesus has been baptized, and then he has spent 40 days in the wilderness being tempted, you'll remember. But Mark begins his reading with, "Now John was arrested." What great information is that? Now John was arrested. I don't know about you, but I want a little more detail. Matthew says the same thing. John was arrested. I want details. I want to know what happened. Who got him? What was he charged with? What was his punishment? But we don't get all that. We get John was arrested. And then Jesus goes on saying, it's time. It's time. It's time for the fulfillment. It's time. I've heard this story, or one of the gospel versions of this story, all my life. It's always been that important story of calling. To be honest, when I saw the scripture, I really wanted to preach on something other than fishers of men. So I looked at the Old Testament, and it was the story of Jonah. So I didn't figure that I was going to get away from fish anyway. So I just embraced it and thought, let's look at this scripture and see what it can tell us more than that story we've heard as children all of our lives. Jesus is ready to begin his ministry. In essence, he's picking up where John has left off. Actually, Jesus has been in the wilderness and is coming out of the wilderness. And granted, he's a little bit different position than John, but he's picking up where John left off. And Jesus has just been baptized, and he spent 40 days in the wilderness, and he's found out his friend has been arrested. So Jesus, I can only assume, recognizes that there's work to be done. It might be wrong to say that Jesus couldn't spread the word alone. But you know, the truth is, he doesn't. Jesus seeks out helpers. He needs to train some followers to help him out. I can't help but think, to be honest, about politicians. What's the first thing you do when you decide to run for office? Donna Beth, you can answer this. What? You put a staff together to help you get through it. That's what you do. That's what Jesus did. Jesus was the first politician? No, maybe not. Maybe not. But even politicians learned from Jesus. How about that? But I chase rabbits there, sorry. Get a good team behind you to spread the word. It looks like Jesus started that whole idea. And a lot has been made about the fact that all the disciples left their work, that they stopped what they were doing. They left their work, they left their homes, they left their families to follow Jesus. We certainly see that here. We certainly see that James and John leave their father sitting in a boat with the hired help. But did they really leave it all behind? I don't really know. I know that the disciples obviously spent a lot of time with Jesus. But was it 24/7, 365 for the rest of their lives? I don't know. We look at Zebedee. We assume he was upset. No, don't leave me like this. But maybe he blessed it. Maybe he said, this is the right thing, go. Or maybe it was a little bit like the movie Billy Elliot. Have you seen that movie? Billy Elliot is a young boy, and he is growing up in the midst of the 80s coal mine industry in Britain, and he's enrolled in a boxing class, and he just can't handle it. He's just no good at it. And he sees meeting across the way a ballet class. And he's intrigued by the ballet class, and he sneaks out of boxing and starts going to ballet. And he has a true gift. He has a true gift for ballet. His father almost can't stand it. The whole community makes fun of him. But the dad starts watching. And the dad realizes that Billy has a gift. And so eventually, spoiler alert, eventually the dad gets on board and takes Billy Elliot to audition for the Royal Ballet. For the Royal Ballet. And as he is auditioning, you see his father's face, and you see the pride and the joy and the love. I don't know what Zebedee felt that day, but in my mind, he eventually had that same proud, loving, joyful look, because he saw that his son was doing what he was gifted at doing. There are some preachers that make this scripture about all of our callings. Some think it's about the calling of ministers. Again, I don't know what it is intended for us today, but I think there are some very important insights for us to gain from these few verses. And one is that those men called by Jesus, who dropped their nets and followed Jesus, did not cease to be fishermen. I remember as a young girl listening to evangelists Billy Graham, Angel Martinez. Listening to evangelists as a young girl and being petrified that if I let myself follow God, if I let myself turn my life over, that God would yank me out of Midwest City, Oklahoma, and send me to some little tribe in some foreign country, and I would have to be a missionary. And I lived in fear of that. And I remember having the conversation with my mother of, I don't want that. And her saying to me that God doesn't ask us to be something we're not. Do we sometimes frighten people away because we ask them to turn their backs on all that they are? And is that what God asks us to do? Now, while in my instance, God did pull me into a direction that I had never dreamed of. But you know, I'd spent my life wanting to be a teacher. And I'm still a teacher. I just teach a different subject and to a different classroom. It's what Jesus means when he calls us to follow. Yes, Simon and Andrew and James and John walked away from their nets, but they didn't cease to be fishermen. As a matter of fact, we hear stories and stories about them continuing to fish and dropping their nets and getting big amounts of fish and sometimes having no luck fishing. Jesus used the terms and the stories that they were familiar with. I'm going to teach you to fish for men. The actual best translation of that scripture is, follow me and I'll make you become fishers. It's not an act. It's not a verb for them to do. It is a life change. I will teach you to be fishers. That says to me, I'm not going to turn you into something totally different. I'm going to take the gifts that you have, the gifts that I gave you, my Father gave you upon your creation. I'm going to use those gifts to further the kingdom. That means something totally different to me. I'm not going to wipe your slate clean and ask you to change everything about you. I'm asking you to take who I made you to be and to be it to the best of your ability. The other important thing that we find here is that Simon, Andrew, James, and John, for them, this was a major, sudden, what seems to be instantaneous decision. But we see for them that is not the end. As a matter of fact, it's only the beginning of the beginning. There is much for them to do. There is much learning. There is much stumbling. There is much misunderstanding. There is much backsliding. Elton Brown says, becoming a faithful Christian disciple takes both a moment and a lifetime. I love that thought. Yes, there's a moment when we decide. Today I give all that I understand about you, God. Today I give all that I am to all that I understand about you. A moment when we decide to make that stand. Like the choir sang this morning, I have decided. But it takes a lifetime of ups and downs, of rights and wrongs, of steps forwards and steps back. Once again, our society has taught us that we need to fully research things. We need to get all the details. We need to know something top to bottom before we commit. That's not possible with Jesus. Faith isn't faith if you understand it all. Faith isn't faith if you know all there is to know. That's fact. Faith is believing when you still have much to learn, when you still have many mistakes to make, when you still have much to seek. And frankly, that's why the church exists and why the church must continue to exist. We're in a day and time when information is all around us. You can listen to hundreds, actually thousands of sermons every Sunday morning if you want to. You can listen to this sermon by tomorrow. You can read hundreds and thousands of books on faith. You can talk online to many different people. You don't have to come here to learn. But we come together because we grow when we share God with one another, when we're in community with other Christians. When we have moments of doubt and fear, there are those around us to lift us up and encourage us. When we go through painful times, there are those around us to share that burden and to help carry that burden. When our faith is weak, there are those around us who can have faith for us. Jesus didn't walk this journey alone. If anyone could have made it on his own, it would have been Jesus, but he didn't. He sent the disciples out in pairs. Don't walk alone. Work together. We make a major decision. Most of you probably remember that moment well when you said, I have decided. Many of you at different times in your life have walked the aisle and said to your church, I have decided. And you followed in believers' baptism and you've said, I have decided. But we still have that lifetime of learning, that lifetime of mistakes, that lifetime of walking with others. Every day, every moment of saying, yes, Lord, I have decided and I'm following you.